Premanandi. So today I'm going to do something from the 10th canto. Before that, I'm going to give a preview not to this week's Monday morning greetings, but to the following week's Monday morning greetings, which I haven't written about. And I'm going to tell a story accosted by a drunk on Second Avenue. It's a fantastic story. A true story happened this morning.
This morning?
Yeah. So, let me first get a verse here that I'll... Okay. First, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Text 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vaya Shruta Priyata Modaya Karna Purai Yasminna Magna Manasastam Atakshi Randrai Antapravesha Sucharim Parirabhyatapam Pragyam Yata Vimatayo Vijahur Narendra. O ruler of men, for a long time those Brahmin ladies had heard about Krishna, their beloved, and his glories had become the constant ornament of their ears. Indeed, their minds were always absorbed in him. Through the apertures of their eyes, they now forced him to enter within their hearts. And then they embraced him within for a long time. In this way, they gave up the pain of separation from him, just as sages give up the anxiety of false ego by embracing their inner consciousness. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Daksuramutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurve Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Turubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have a term called through the eyes of Shastra. How you see things through the lens of knowledge. So that my Monday morning greetings you read, and that's basically the basis of them, how the Shastra enables you to see something. Sometimes you can't see something. You say, you see that over there? No. Well, look at it from this angle. Oh, now I see it. So it's kind of interesting because it makes you aware. So I'll just tell you the next Monday morning greetings, not this Monday morning, that's already written, but the following. It's called Accosted by a Drunk. So I was staying with Rati, the Bhakti Center, many people were there, so I was staying with Rati. And I get up early. I got up a little late this morning, about 2:30. So it's true. I got up a little late. But anyway, I had to write my Monday morning greetings. I took a bath, everything, and then I said, well, let me do what I usually do in the Bhakti Center, go in and chant about 3:30 in the morning before Mangal Arati. A little bit later. So I was walking, and then it was really, I was trying to figure it out because I couldn't believe all these people hadn't gone to sleep yet. and I'm walking down the street, and I realize, okay, it's a nice neighborhood now, but on Friday nights and Saturday nights, etc., there's bars, and people hang out at bars. So I'm walking, and I'm just walking, and I'm saying, wow, these people are not asleep yet. It's already like 3:30 in the morning. It's like 3:45, and they're not asleep yet. And then, of course, the verse from the Gita came to my mind.
What's night for the
conditioned souls is time of awakening for the enlightened souls. Not that I was feeling, okay, I'm enlightened, but I wasn't drunk. So I was watching, and then, of course, you just look at it, my God. There's this concept where people seek pleasures which don't give them happiness. Mm-hmm. And we're also condemned by that. We know all the things we do that don't give us happiness, but we like to do. So I'm just saying, wow. This is what these people think that is happiness, and it just doesn't work. They're all miserable. Then, of course, I think, what is the difference between myself and my brothers, who are pretty good guys? I mean, I really appreciate they take care of my mother. They're responsible people. But still, the difference is knowledge. Knowledge enables you to understand what to do and what not to do, and how to see things in the right way. We all have different opinions of the same thing, but there is an ultimate reality. There's a subjective nature of what we have taste for, but whether something or not is pleasurable or not is not necessarily subjective. People are alcoholics, right? And it's not good, and it doesn't help them, but that's their pleasure. So, and then I was walking down the street and saying, well, this may be also like a little dangerous because these people are drunk, and it affects your perception. But anyway, I was just walking down the street. And then just as I got to the Bhakti Center, this guy who was drunk came to me and started to ask me some questions, and I answered it reasonably. And the first thing out of his mouth was, "You trying to F with me?" And then I kind of understood, like, okay, I'm not dealing with booty or intelligence. I'm just dealing with the mind. And already, due to the modern influence, postmodern influence, etc., people have a screwed up view of reality, even when they're sober. But now, and then people have issues. He was trying to find out about my religion. I don't know what he was doing. And peace in the world. I don't know, but it was really... So I thought, wow, it's possible that this could get violent. It's possible. I wasn't worried. And then I realized that, okay, I don't have the combination to the door to the Bhakti Center. And even if I did, I wouldn't open up. This guy may come in. No one's up yet. So I'm kind of like, it's really interesting. Is this interesting? Isn't this in front of me?
I'm just wondering where it's going to go.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm like scared for you, but you're here, so I'm like...
Okay, it's a good story, okay? It's a good story. And then, just as about to get heated, then who shows up but Madhu Mangal? No, I'm joking. Madhu Mangal is a friend of mine. That would have been a great story. It would have been finished right then and there. In the second, like, it would have been a happy ending, Madhu. Not for that guy, though. So I'm kind of, and it's gone on, you know, it seems longer than it is. It definitely, somewhere between 5 and 20 minutes. I thought it was about 20 minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes. So you can't reason with the person. So you really have to look, you have to really look deep in the person's mind and find out what aspects of reality he actually could see. Now, he doesn't start with a vision of reality. Whatever vision he's obscured, now what can he actually see? So, you know, I was talking to him and I saw, you know, he would react to, you know, things. He said, "What's your name?" I said, "Maharaj." He said, "You're Jewish?" Then there's something about changing your religion. I didn't know where that one was going to go. And, yeah. Anyway, and my thinking was, like, also, it was really interesting, is that, you know, I had fasted completely from Ekadasi. I just took two Kavita apple cider vinegar that's all I took. So basically, and I was really focused. So my consciousness was quite undisturbed. So then I was actually thinking of the Yoga Sutras. And the Yoga Sutras says if you perfect ahimsa or nonviolence, then there is a vibration that goes out. And when you perfect nonviolence, which means you don't even have desire to exploit or harm, then it creates peace in the environment to such an extent that in the presence of a saintly person, even a cobra and a mongoose, the most deadly enemies, won't fight. So I said, okay, well, here's your test. Here's your test. So I was pretty calm, you know, and just seeing, and then also realizing, just from the modes of nature, that the external affects the consciousness. Like, cleanliness is the object of sight and goodness. So if you have to do some writing or something, clean your desk first. It will give you more clarity. And so I thought, like, you know, this is New York, and it's New York in night. The whole place is in the mode of ignorance. And what happens with ignorance, you don't see properly, and therefore you're liable to do things wrong because your whole vision is obscured. So it leads to immorality, right? And I was just thinking, well, you know, it went on about 10 minutes, and, you know, it was such a ridiculous, you know, anything I would say or try to say, he would take offense to and interpret it the wrong way, basically. I said, yeah, I'm going to go upstairs to have, you know, I don't know. Anyway, So it kept on going on, and I could see that there was some effect on him. He was becoming a little bit more peaceful, a little more peaceful. And then, Madhavi, I'm sorry, there's not going to be any dynamic. Well, then this guy came down from the Bhakti Center to open the door. And he said, Maharaj, come in. And he said, oh, look, 3 more minutes.
Wow.
And I told the guy, okay, give me 3 more minutes. And then after about 10 or 15 seconds, I said, okay, I have to go now, which he would have objected before. And then I saw like another thing too, which is interesting, is the person who came to the door, he lives in the Bhakti Center, and he's a very interesting guy because he's from a Kshatriya family. And he really is disciplined and kind of holds himself with like real nobility. You know, he's got really, I've watched him because he's so dutiful. When I'm in the temple at 3:30, he comes in, you know, and he mops the temple, and he opens the door at 4 o'clock. They give him anything that has to be regulated. He was a lawyer. He's a young guy, a lawyer in India who twice took down very, very big people when no one else wanted to take the case for fear of their life. In one case, he caught some huge politician and he exposed him for embezzling $2 billion, some huge amount in India. And then the guy said, and I kind of just walked in. But then I also thought that guy, he was a Kshatriya, he had a Kshatriya bhav. So it immediately projected to the guy authority. Because immediately he just, okay, I'm going. Anyway, you think it'll make a Monday morning greetings? Is enough there? I'll try. I'll do anything for a good story. Even that whole kidnapping thing, I was so happy with my parents. Why? I'm going to be able to tell this one for like 10 years, you know? But that's the title of that Monday morning greetings. Accosted by a drunk. It's going to be called Saturday morning greetings from a drunk. Okay. Now we'll get back to the story. So this is a little bit more informal today. So we can stop at any time for questions, except Gail. Okay?
I was happy just at the informal part.
Okay, informal. So besides my Leela pastime on Second Avenue, you know, when I like to speak to a group of intimate devotees, I like to speak about Krishna's pastimes. And it is the way to become purified, because material consciousness, false ego, the thing that binds us in the world and is the cause of all suffering, the cause is ego, or we'll say false ego, this desire for superiority that doesn't like, that's why I wrote an article, You're Wrong, how people don't like to be told they're wrong. It's a huge issue for them. For most people, they defend tooth and nail. And the reason is because when you have that false ego, It's this desire for superiority. And the sense of superiority is felt when you control the world. Or at least control your world. When everything is moving according to your desires. And that's also the danger when everything goes right. Somebody came to me recently. I was counseling them, and their whole life, everything was going great. Really just very pious. And then something happened. It was like Buddha, you know, no problems, and then all of a sudden they see something happening. And I was explaining to them that, you know, your life has been charmed. If it always was charmed, it doesn't solve your problem because it doesn't change your consciousness. And happiness is your consciousness. It's not the way the world moves around you. We try to move the world, and we should to a certain degree, to affect the consciousness. But happiness will only come when the consciousness is filled with love and compassion and devotion and service. So even if it lines up perfectly, it's still not ultimately going to be satisfying because it doesn't change your mind. And if you're attached, there's a lot of fear. And the fear is that what I have will change. And when we don't control the world, that's always a fear. And then we see that on the material platform of controlling the world, everyone loses the game completely. Whatever you have is gone at the end. So how to get out of this consciousness of being the center and trying to make things, seeing the world through our own desires. How do you get over that? Well, one of the ways is love. Because when you have true love, pure love, the highest love, universal love, then what happens is love means I want someone else to center. And what does the center mean? The center means whose desires control. That's what the center is. If you love someone, you want to move the world around them. If you really love someone, you'll make every sacrifice and you want to move the world around them. That's love on any platform. And the highest thing is when you put God in the center. And how do you do that? You become attracted to serve God by hearing his pastimes. This is what Vyasadeva, his conclusion for Kali Yuga. You have to become attracted to Krishna. And when you become attracted to Krishna, and you actually develop that love, and that type of love is very, very natural. I had a tremendous, wonderful realization this year. I love to see the philosophy in the world. I'm writing a Monday morning greetings. This Monday will come out the relationship between humility and praying. And the way I'm explaining how they both nourish each other, there's a great relationship between them and such. When there's humility and prema, food and hunger diminish each other. When you have less, when you have no hunger, there's no food. They diminish each other. When hunger goes down, then food is going down. Food goes down, hunger increases. So love and humility nourish each other. So I wanted to give practical examples. You know, I thought about five examples of that. So I really always wanted an example of what bhakti is. Very, very clearly, what is bhakti? And then I told, I got this example when I was in Vrindavan and in the gardens of Vrindavan with a friend of mine, and then a cow gave birth to a calf, and I saw that. It's illegal to have a cow in New York. I'm going to see a cow give birth to a calf. So cow gives birth to a calf, and I'm there, and it's such an amazing thing. The calf is on all spread eagle. And then it goes like this. It goes like this, and it gets up. Right? It gets up. And then it immediately goes for the cow. It immediately goes for the cow. And then the cow starts to lick the calf. Like very intensely, and the calf is searching for the milk, and I see that there's actually an energy in this world called love between two beings who have relationship. It's very, very natural, a mother and a child. It doesn't have to be, you know, it's not intellectual. You don't have to figure it out. It's something like a magnet, and that energy is actually the energy of the world. And it's most intense between the soul and God. So, and when you hear Krishna's pastimes, that energy starts to develop within your consciousness. And when that energy develops into your consciousness, that's love. Love means to put someone in the center and to try to move the world around their desires. That's what love is. And that's how you get over the false ego. When we develop that type of feeling. So one way is Krishna's pastimes, and it's very important to hear them. And they exemplify that love, and they communicate that love when you hear them. So I thought I would just start telling one Krishna pastime, one that I've told many times, but I really like it. It's the wives of the Brahmins. What I like about these pastimes is they not only exemplify that the love, but they have very beautiful philosophical points. So this particular pastime, I like to start the verse we did today, verse 23. And it's really where the story starts. But where the story starts doesn't begin at the beginning of the story, but it goes back where the story starts. And where the story starts is that there's wives of Brahmins. There's gopis, and they have their duties, and their duties is, no, there's wives of Brahmins, and they have their duties, they assist their husbands, and for the Brahmins, for the puja, you need ghee and milk, and you need flowers, so the Brahmin wives, they would buy them every day from the gopis. Because the gopis were simple cowherd girls, and they would sell flowers and sell milk. So they would sit there in a particular marketplace, and they would sell their wares, and the Brahmins would know where to go every day. And when they would go there, the gopis would always be talking about Krishna. Because the main symptom of love is kirtan. When you love someone, that love is expressed. that's why a paramour, someone who has a paramour, has another love of paramours, like parakia. In English, it's paramour. Amour, you love another, not your husband or wife. So when someone has a paramour, you love another, parakia, in bhakti, the gopis love another, but it's not really another, it's God. So parakia means kia, to do with another. So parakia and paramour is like the same word. So they have. So what you have is one way you get caught is you have to express that love. So a lot of times it comes out. Who you love comes out because it's expressed. So sometimes even the lady or the man, and sometimes if they have an affair with someone that's known, they're automatically glorifying them, and then it becomes suspicious. I guess today they find it on the cell phones and text. That's the way most people get caught. You have to express it. So the expression of love is a very interesting thing. Because what kirtan is, and kirtan is not just song, what kirtan is when the bhava in your heart is expressed in music. So your love becomes reshaped in sound. And when someone hears that sound, especially if it's bhava, bhava means spiritual love. The gopis have spiritual love for Krishna. That spiritual love is so deep. Because that spiritual love is an energy of God that becomes one with their consciousness. Like you put an iron rod in fire, the iron rod becomes fire. So people who have this bhava, they love Krishna so much, they have the tendency to love Krishna, and Krishna gives them his internal potency, his ladini shakti, his loving potency. And it's like an iron rod and fire becomes fire. Their mind becomes Krishna's love. It's very intense. And then that's expressed. And then the expression of it becomes the same energy. So if someone hears that, that energy comes into their heart. And that's how we advance in bhakti. It's so nice. Janavi was here already twice. You know Janavi?
I know people by their faces, not their names.
Okay, I have to introduce you to Janavi. You ever heard her sing?
Probably.
Look on the internet, Janavi. She's amazing. And she's pure, you see. So, and this morning, I was at the Bhakti Center. It's really been amazing there in the morning. 40 people at Mangalarti. I give class, the Bhagavatam, 40 people. Qualities of the kirtans were so good. I remember when Indradumna Swami came here to Rutgers, and there was like 500 kids dancing. 500 kids dancing, and then Kula Pradeep looked at me and say, "What's this, Poland?" But I was looking at that in the morning. I was looking at the kirtan. What is this, 1970? And then Vaisheshu led, and then Janavi led a bhajan before. So beautiful. So what happens is, when someone has that bhava in their hearts, and they express it, then their heart reshape, their love reshape, actually comes into your body. And we advance. That's why it's so nice when people really know how to do kirtan, not entertainment, but it's actually born from a deep part in their heart of love of God. It's so powerful. It has such a powerful effect. Without bhava, it's not kirtan. It should also be nice music, but... So the gopis were speaking. And so what were they speaking about? Krishna. But how were they speaking about Krishna? They were speaking with such love. And they were speaking so much about Krishna that the kirtan became karna purai. The kirtan was the ornaments of their ears. Just like you wearing earrings. Makes you look more beautiful. So for the devotee, it's the kirtan. They're just Krishna, 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 Krishna. And they talk, you hear about Krishna, you hear what Krishna did, Krishna did this, you hear about this, Krishna did this, Krishna what? Krishna, 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 Krishna. Your advancement in bhakti is exactly commensurate with your desire to hear. I'll embarrass her. I was complimenting Janine today. Because I was in the temple last night. She was there in my morning Bhagavatam class. I was in the temple at night. She was there listening to Madhavananda. That's our bhakti. Our bhakti is a desire to hear. The most important thing in devotional service is sadhu sangha. You want to advance, you have to have sadhu sangha. And what is sadhu sangha? It's hearing from devotees who are more advanced, like-minded, and you can develop a relationship with. Because that enters the heart. So sadhu sangha and that hearing. So here the Brahmin's wives, and what do they hear? Krishna, Krishna, you hear what Krishna did? You hear what Krishna looks like? Shaimam Hiranya Paridim Vanamalya Barha. Try to learn a verse yesterday morning. Shaimam, swathi complexion. Hiranya Paridim, golden garments. Vanamalya Varya. Forest flower garlands. Varha, peacock feather. Wow! Is Krishna cool? I mean, a peacock feather. I forgot the rest there, but very beautiful. So they're talking for a long time, and what happens? By hearing, they develop a love for Krishna. And love is not just, love is an emotion, but more than an emotion, love is a voice in the heart. And that's what bhakti is. Bhakti means to love. And how is that love expressed? It's expressed in the heart. Without the heart, then nothing has love. So Krishna hears that heart. He hears that heart. Prabhupada said, and Krishna is responsive. So he reciprocates. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said Krishna doesn't have the defect of impersonality. Krishna reciprocates with your love. And that his pleasure is our love. So he actually can hear your heart. One sadhu told me we should chant the holy name very sweetly, understanding that Krishna hears it and gets pleasure from it. It's the principle in the world. Love is surrender. When someone gives their life to you, I saw somehow by super soul, I was in my room in the Bhakti Center, had absolutely no reason to go downstairs. Well, let me go downstairs and see the deities. And who do I see? Gail and family. Right? And I saw before Gail left, her daughters were grabbing everything, right? Wanting to, not her to carry anything. Like affection. And that wins the heart. When someone actually loves you and gives their heart to you, that's a basic principle. But we're supposed to offer that principle to the universe. Because that's our eternal relationship. Ultimately, what exists is Krishna and Krishna's energies. And Shakti comes from a source to please its source. So that's the cosmic consciousness. We're ultimately, we're souls and we're parts of God. And this is the cosmic arrangement, that there's something that is Advayam Gyan, which is consciousness, which is inclusive of everything, which we're part of and we're meant to serve. And we have that energy, like the cow and the calf between God, but it's covered right now. We want to uncover the cloud of ignorance. Although the sun is so bright, the cloud of ignorance covers the sun. We can't experience the heat and light. When that is uncovered, there's this feeling. And that feeling is not only pleasure, it is God's pleasure. So if we believe in God, then what is God's pleasure? How intense is that? God's own pleasure enters into your heart, or you feel it. You feel the energy, the relationship. You feel the love of God, and that same energy you feel in your heart being offered to God. So it started to awaken by this association. And Krishna saw. This is how we advance in bhakti. Krishna sees our sincerity. He sees that if we want to live by truth, that's the point, right in our heart, that we want to live by truth. Truth is not selfishness. Truth is service. Universal love. That's truth. There's an absolute truth. Do we want to live by that? Or do we only want to live by what our desire is? We want to rise above that. Very heavy. And Krishna's watching. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam ekobohanam yobhidati. There's many, many, many eternals, and there's one supreme eternal. There's many, many living forces, and there's one supreme living force. And the many are supposed to serve the one. Krishna is Ishvara. Vara means the circle, Ish is the center. There's a center of the universe. And actually, because the universe is infinite, because it's infinite, then God is everywhere. Where there is no center, where there is no circumference, the center is everywhere. So God is in another dimension. And we want to connect with that. And we want to feel that. And when you feel a drop of that, that is called Shraddha, or faith. And that's the most fortunate thing. Because faith means to have trust in the right goal. And what's the right goal? The right goal is that thing which actually can give you happiness. And what can actually give us happiness is our connection with God. And of course, I make this point very clear so you don't become discouraged. Bhakti is not against enjoyment. Without enjoyment, you die. If your senses are not pleased, you die. It's not against your ambitions. But your sense pleasure and your egotistical pleasure, the problem is if you make it your goal rather than the means to your goal. The goal is to realize the self. Now you can have ambitions and make it a goal, because that may be your nature, that I want to do this in life, I want to accomplish this in life. And you can do it. But why? Well, because this is will make me peaceful for the higher endeavor of the soul. There's two mistakes you can make. One, you can look at sense enjoyment and egotistical pleasure as the goal rather than the means to the goal. As Bori Jean Prabhu said, we eat to live. We don't live to eat. We enjoy to live. We don't live to enjoy. So we're not against enjoyment. But why would we enjoy, and how much will we enjoy, and what will we do? Because it's a goal. So it's the means. The other problem is because it's the means, to give up the means. That's another problem. Because this is the goal, surrender to Krishna and full bhakti. Then, well, we give up the means. No, but we need those things to keep the body together. It's called yukta vairagya. So anyway, getting back to our story, it enters into the hearts. Krishna's hearing that. And this is what Krishna wants. He wants our love for himself. The very beautiful thing is we can explain Krishna's pleasure is infinitely expanding, and we can help expand it. And he has compassion because he's a person. The very definition of God is that he's omnipotent. He's all powerful. He's omniscient. He knows everything. And he's omnibenevolent. He's all good. Which is one of the arguments used against the existence of God. Because there's evil in the world. And if God is all powerful and he knows everything and can do something about it, if he doesn't, then how can he be good? But I already wrote about that in Monday morning readings. I gave all good arguments to reconcile that. To reconcile that point. So anyway, Krishna hears the hearts and he wants to reciprocate because he's responsive. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And what does that mean? He's a supreme enjoyer. And what does he enjoy? He enjoys love. But to enjoy love, you have to love yourself. Right? It's not that you just enjoy love. You enjoy love from those whom you love. So God also has to love. And he reciprocates. So there's an ultimate reality, rasa vai saha. There's an ultimate reality where God is exchanging love, and that's ultimately what exists. And that's what we are meant to participate in eternally. And that's what's exemplified in Krishna's pastimes. So Krishna is with his friends, and his friends come to him and say, Dushta Bahana, you are the destroyer of the wicked. The most wicked thing is hunger, so why don't you feed us? Get us some food. And that's their love. Because one form of love is the flavor that someone is your maintainer. So if the child pulls on the mother's sari or designer jeans and pulls on him and says, Mommy, Mommy, I'm hungry. Right? Like if Kishori saw that Narayan was hungry. Really hungry, not just gluttonous, because Kishori's pretty tough too. And said, Mommy, do you have anything that I can take now? That would also be his love for you. Now you can see how the mother enjoys more than the child. I can see that. So they're asking Krishna. And then Krishna's thinking of certain devotees now makes a plan to reciprocate their love. He's thinking of certain devotees and he's making a plan to reciprocate their love. So he tells his coward boys, there's some Brahmins nearby performing a sacrifice, you go beg for food. So then the cowherd boys, they're a little bit nervous because they're just cowherd boys and they have to go to Brahmins. The Brahmins are doing the sacrifice. So Krishna says, just announce my name. Kirtiyanto Bhagavato. Just tell my name. Kirtiyanto, just do kirtan. Why you do kirtan? Because the nature of kirtan, it makes people pious. Chaito, Dharpana, Marjana. Philosophy, people, you ask someone for service or you give them philosophy, they can intellectually and egotistically resist. So now they can resist. So you have to give them some inclination for it. So the nature of kirtan is, because melody and rhythm is universal, that people will accept Krishna and have association with Krishna willingly. And it will create within them some piety in their heart. So he says, Kirtiyanto Bhagavato. So they announce, we're here and Krishna's sent us for some food, to beg some food for you. And Bhadram Te, this is very auspicious. They tell him it's very auspicious. Auspicious means which will do good and give good fortune. People don't know what's auspicious. The most auspicious thing is to have service. That's the most auspicious thing. If someone gives you service, that's so auspicious. But you may not think so. You may think, oh, this is taking my time. This is too much trouble. But if someone gives you service, you're actually praying for service. That's the Hare Krishna mantra. We understand the highest thing is to serve, because that's the nature of the soul. It's putting a fish in water. It's our nature. So if someone offers you service, how wonderful is that? If you get an opportunity to do service, we should pray for service. The definition of bhakti that I like best that I heard was given by my godbrother Pradyumna. He said, bhakti means to make yourself available. Whew. That's heavy. Available for what? Service. To announce to Krishna, please give me service. Because service may not conform with your material objectives and desires. But the most auspicious thing is to serve. Because that is happiness. What's auspiciousness? Auspiciousness is what gives you happiness. And ultimately, everyone would ultimately understand that happiness is selflessness, sacrifice, compassion, and love. An advanced devotee, you can see, there's some people that are just serving and serving and serving and serving and serving. Selflessly serving and serving and serving and serving. For material platform, it looks like, hey, this guy's not having a good time at all. He doesn't have a life of his own. But those are the people that actually, ultimately, if you think of them, those are the people that you really admire the most. Those are the people that have that smile on their face, like Krishna. There's a Sanskrit word for Krishna's smile, which is called smita. And what smita is, it's a smile, a happiness on your face that doesn't have an external cause.
It's not coming. I am smiling because I heard a great joke. And then after the joke is finished, you're like this again. But there's a certain smile which is the constitution of one with a pure heart. They're always smiling. It's not external impetus that makes them smile. It's the very nature of their heart that's expressed in them. And generally, these are people who just serve. They just serve selflessly. They take care of their needs, or sometimes they even sacrifice their needs, but they serve selflessly. And therefore, they access the heart. Sometimes when I do seminars on meditation, the goal of meditation is to live within the self. And what is the self? The self is consciousness, which reaches its fruition in love. So what is, so I do, and I lead people through guided meditations, and they're chanting and they're chanting and they're chanting. And then I ask them to feel gratitude. Because gratitude, and this is my analysis, is the first budding consciousness of the real self. Gratitude is also humility. When you're feeling entitled, you can't experience love no matter what you get. When you have that consciousness, I deserve, then you can't feel love. So gratitude, thank you, it's the first symptom of the soul. So these cowherd boys, they tell the Brahmins, O knower of the Vedas, Bhadram Te, this is auspicious, we're going to give you service. Oh, if you have faith, in bhakti, everything is faith, everything. That trust, that goal. Faith means trust by evidence. That's how you have faith. And what's the evidence? Krishna is very merciful. Sometimes he gives us a drop of that divine love. And then that becomes our goal. We experience something. That becomes our goal. Let me have that. And that becomes... Goal or objective is everything. You have the wrong objective, your life is wasted. And we see that. We see that in the papers. People have political goals. They have celebrity goals, they have money goals, but that doesn't ensure happiness. And they may work their whole life and be satisfied. Especially see with very, very wealthy people, their objective is to have wealth. And when they get more, what happens? Their attachments increase. So they have the same exact want as they had when they were poorer. Govardhan, you remember when you were living over there in Queens in that simple apartment, right? I remember that, right? You weren't even working as an electrician yet, right?
No.
Simple apartment, right? Somehow, and I used to stay there sometimes, Rupa Raghunath stayed there for the first time, and somehow or other you were making ends meet, right? Now you're making 10 times as much, and still, right?
not any better off.
It is in one sense. I mean, there's kids and the whole thing. I mean, so you gotta have the factor. But the fact is, if you increase your attachments more than your needs, now needs doesn't mean sannyas. Right? Ladies should have needs to look nice and have saris and jewelry and things like that. But not not, you know, 400 pairs of shoes. When you go beyond your needs, you increase your attachments. And therefore you have the same angst at every period, at every level. Therefore, the secret to happiness is contentment. Enough. Boy, that is so tough, isn't it? You're going to have to downsize, Kishore, if you want to get into that nice apartment. Right?
I'm thinking about it.
Right, but enough.
That book is helping.
I know.
Yeah.
It is. It's a great book. Enough. I didn't give it like the Yoga Sutras. I gave it the Japanese science of tidying your house. Enough. Enough. Contentment. We're all struggling. I also, you know, let's say if I can increase my preaching, maybe I can upgrade to business class. And then if you upgrade to business class, then you're just as dissatisfied because now you want first class. Enough. It's a struggle. I try to do that, honestly. I try to live simply. I try not to want more. Because it's the same situation. So faith is faith in the right objective. And the right objective is happiness. And happiness ultimately is a heart filled with devotion. Ultimately. Now we may be disturbed if we don't get our basic needs met, we don't have our reasonable ambitions met. That's okay. But that's not the goal, because it's not ultimately going to give you happiness. And everybody experiences, they stand in front of the 7-Eleven in Parsippany with a big check, 20 workers chipped in to win the lottery, and they're smiling, right? But happiness will elude them unless they change their consciousness and heart. And that's what the Krishna's pastimes is trying to show. It's trying to show what real happiness is. It's bhava. It's this energy of Krishna in our heart. It's this love that comes from those who are wanting to serve. So they tell the Brahmins, if you have faith, O knowers of religion, O dvija. Dvija means Brahmin, because a Brahmin, it means second birth. Second birth, first birth is from the mother and father. Second birth is diksha. Second initiation, we call it. It's a second birth. But he says, O dvija. And dvija means, if you don't actually serve God and you refuse to serve as to God, then, oh, you are dvija. Dvi means two, and ja means born. Oh, you who are born of two people. That's a pretty distinctive position, right? No one got the joke. Born of two people, get it? It's nothing. Right? Dvija means obese. Gail, no?
No.
Obese. Your daughters are wearing you out with this wedding stuff. I see you. You're so exhausted. I'm sleeping here. But you're exhausted, Gail.
Twice born. Dvija means twice born. So born of two people. Of course you're born of two people. That's what I don't get.
No. Look. They're being sarcastic. Because if you're Brahmins, right?
Yeah.
And Satkarma Nipano Vipro, Mantra Tantra Visharada, A Vaishnava Guru Nasya, Vaishnava Swapacho Guru. If you're a Brahmin, but you're not a Vaishnava, you're not humble, you don't understand God, you're not willing to sacrifice, it just becomes a designation. Another designation to control the world of a higher class. That if you're not going to get Krishna, they're coming. You're going swaha, swaha. A few of these snaps. The water, swasti, swasti, swasti. But if you don't, the Yajna Vishnu. If you don't give to Vishnu, And Vishnu comes, his servants come and offer the food, and you don't give it to us, then you're not Dvija twice born, but you're Dvija born of two people. Twice born means the highest elevation of society. Born of two people means, oh, you who are any living entity in the world.
I bet you I'm not the only person who got that, who didn't get that. I bet you I'm not the only person who didn't get that.
Gail, it's a very, I wouldn't make that a big thing. It's a very slow audience today. I mean, it reminds me of the first time I was preaching at this prestigious university. I was making all these great jokes. And none of the Indians got them. It just didn't have the same sense of humor. But of this group, this illustrious group, I expected to get, oh, Dvija, born of two people. Ha, 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 ha. Nothing. You're not the only one, Gail. No one got it. I'm completely crushed. They don't even say Om. They don't even acknowledge it. They just don't acknowledge it. The whole, you see, ritual means to conform yourself to something higher than yourself. That's what ritual means. But if you don't have that conception, then the ritual becomes useless. And that's why so many people are against organized religion, they're against religion, etc., because it looks ridiculous. Because people's objective is what? The prosperity gospel in American churches. You worship Jesus and you become wealthy. You get anything you want. That's not what Christianity is about. I can't quote all the verses, but people can quote those verses. It's not what it's about. So, then what happens is, why did I become a Hare Krishna instead of an Orthodox Jew? I'm trying to get your attention. Turn around. Why did I become a Hare Krishna instead of go to Judaism? Because I grew up, my parents went to the synagogue once a year on Yom Kippur. After the service. They would dress up after the service when everybody got out. At least they were going. No one goes now. They went to Yom Kippur, etc. But what was their objective? Their objective was materialism. So I said, if that's the objective, why are you doing this, sitting in a boring sermon? Sitting in a boring sermon, or whatever you call it. Why are you sitting in there sacrificing, fasting on Yom Kippur, eating matzah? What's the use? If you want to enjoy, then enjoy. So when the rituals become separated from their objectives, they have no purpose. And that often happens, even in an institution. What happens in an institution? There's a very charismatic, powerful leader like Prabhupada. Then his values have to be socialized and they have to be spread. So you make an institution with that objective. But what could happen is, and I think ISKCON's doing great, it's spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Bhakti Center will probably be part of ISKCON. Things are happening. If you travel around the world, phenomenal things are happening. But still, the tendency is that the objective of the institution becomes the institution rather than its goals. And then people say, well, what is the use? The goals are compassion and bhakti and giving things. Then if the objectives just become the institution becomes the religion rather than the principles want its base. So this was also, Krishna wants to make the point that I give bhakti to people who actually have love for me. And there's that beautiful verse, prayers by Prahlad Maharaj, where he says, even if someone has all 12 brahminical qualities, good qualities, shamo, damastapo, saucham, shantir, arjivam, avijja, gyanam, vijnanam, asticam, brahma, karma, you have peacefulness, tolerance, self-control, religiousness, cleanliness. You have all these qualities, but you're not a devotee. You can't even save yourself. And devotee is not an artificial term. What does devotee mean? It's a big term. One time someone said, oh, Prabhupada, you're the greatest devotee. He said, no, devotee is not an ordinary thing. What does a devotee mean? It's so painful even to say it as an American and a gung-ho. And it's someone who's surrendered to the will of God humbly, that understands that there's something greater than just what I want. There's a truth. And I'm surrendered to that truth. Isn't that what a person of character is? When you're with a person, right? Who do you like? You like the people that follow principles. Not just what their desires are. Someone who's surrendered to principles. He's surrendered to truth. It's such a heavy thing. So, the Brahmins are just ritualistic and they ignore. The cowherd boys come home and Krishna, they're so disappointed. But the cowherd boys, you can see, they got an order from Krishna. It was a difficult order. You have to go beg. Begging is a crush to the ego. You got to go begging. It's such a crush to the ego. Got to admire these guys in Union Square. You got to admire them that go out, book distribution, they approach different people. You get rejected constantly. Because that thing, I am superior. So you go, we'd like to take a book. So difficult. These people are very advanced. So Krishna laughs. He says, that's the way of the world. That's the way of the world. He said, but go ask the wives. And then you'll see the contrast that Krishna wants to show. What action? It's such a common principle. What pleases is love. And love is based on sacrifice and surrender. Without surrender, there's no love. Love is not just about what I want to do. So he said, you go to the wives of the Brahmins. And this is the Vedic time, and the wives, they can't do any of the rituals. They don't get educated. Don't get so upset, Janine. They don't get educated. They can't do any of the rituals. It's not like the Bhakti Center that you have the ladies doing the puja and the artiks. They can't do any of that. It's producing children. It's not a very clean thing, having children. I'm not against it. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying the nature of the activity. They're slobbering all over you constantly. You have to clean them. I think in Vedic times they wouldn't let people who walk around with dogs worship the deities. With that plastic bags after the dogs, I was just like, I remember this Indian came. He came from, he's coming to America, the land of culture and opportunity. He's in Boston and people are walking the dogs and picking it up in plastic bags. It's just like... Guru means heavy, Janine. So then what happens, he said, go to the wives. And what happens when he went to the wives? They couldn't believe it. They came and said, we've come. So, the Krishna is nearby and he has some service for you. and they leave, and their husbands say, stop. They, you know, stop. And basically, it's, get out of the way, I'll kill you. Look hard at Krishna. Get out of the way. Don't mess with me. Like the water, which is going down the river, it can't be stopped going down the mountain. The rocks are there and the water goes around the rocks. You can't, like the river flowing to the sea. It's so spontaneous. So immediately, their husbands, without any obstacle, they could serve Krishna and they don't. The wives with tremendous obstacles. And they bring the beautiful food stuff and they're going to bring it to Krishna. And now I'm going to make a long story short. So I keep on time. It's my nature. I feel if you do programs, you do it in a way that people can schedule their lives around it. We have a program. It's from this time to this time. So I'm going to end at 1 o'clock. I may take
three questions.
What did you say, Gail?
I may take three questions from me.
I do not take questions from people who come late.
Oh. But okay. I'm on time for the lecture.
Okay, you're right. Only because I waited for you.
I
said, Gail's not here yet. Do more kirtan. So, we'll make a long story short. So the wives come and they see Krishna for the first time externally. And there's a verse. And Krishna is beautifully decorated. And his smile is from ear to ear. And Krishna's hair cascades in the front with beautiful curls, and it doesn't cover his ears. See, he's got nice long hair, but it comes out in the front and the back. In fact, this is where it comes from. Krishna spends a lot of time with his hair every day. And I remember, you know, what you grew up with, the culture you grew up with. I remember when I would go to school, it's disgusting, but We had to put this glue on our head called hair tamer, which would like freeze your head like glue. And then, you know, you'd have a part here and then it would be combed. Your mother would comb the hair and then the hair would like stiffen up. This is what we did. And, you know, and a lot of people, you know, like it would comb their hair, you know, like. The men would do it. They'd comb their hair like this. Well, Krishna would do that. Krishna would comb his hair every day. But he would do it because it would attract the conditioned souls. So he looked so beautiful. So they saw his hair. His smile, smita, I said, it's not external cause you're laughing. It's not a joke. It's just your being is very beautiful. And he has his golden garments and the Vaijanti mala of the forest flowers, bar hair, the peacock, and the golden dhoti. And then they saw. And then Krishna, when they came, they made so much sacrifice. And Krishna said, oh, please sit down. What can I do for you? In so form. Make a long story short with the rasa intestine. He sent them back to their husbands. Because he thought this will not look good. It's one thing running around with people of the cowherd girls. But if with the Brahmins, that's going to be too much. He said, you go back. This is an interesting point. I'm going to finish here. He go back. He said, because it's not that you're with me by physical presence. You're with me by consciousness, by the process of chanting and hearing. So you go back And you'll be with me by that process, chanting, hearing. And now this is the interesting thing of the story, what happens. Is when they finally go, they come back. One lady was prevented physically from going by their husbands. They caught her before. And there's one of the wives of the Brahmins that couldn't go. And then when they came back and they mentioned that they went, she fainted and died and went back to Krishna. She immediately, by the intensity of separation, went eternally with Krishna. And then the other wives of the Brahmins got liberated by that lady's mercy. So it actually proved the point that our separation from God is not physical, it's consciousness. You can't physically be in the proximity of God. Or you can, but it has to be by consciousness. And then, when they came back, then the husbands saw how effulgent they were, and they said, my God, they're actually my guru now. My wives have become my guru. I could have killed myself. That's what my mother said when she was in Vrindavan for 3 days, and she was in the guest house, and then I greeted her in the morning, and she said, something terrible happened last night. I said, what is it? She said, I can't tell you. No, something terrible happened. No, I can't tell you. It was horrible. I said, Mom, what happened? She said, something terrible. I said, Mom, tell me what happened. I woke up in the middle of the night and I was chanting Hare Krishna. I could have killed myself. So the Brahmins said, oh my God, my wives have become my guru. I could have killed myself. But they had to admit it. They had to admit it. And then they said, well, what it not only is material things, ego, and, you know, sense gratification not the goal, but the goal is also not peacefulness, tolerance, self-control, religiousness, everything else. If those qualities are used to fortify your superiority. They're also, so they started to condemn these things because they just made me proud. I condemn my, you know, birth, I condemn my celibacy, I condemn this, I condemn this, I condemn this, I condemn this, because they turned me away from Krishna. My wives couldn't do any of the purificatory activities. They were too dirty to do the rituals because of the kids. We didn't send them to school. Why do they have to go to school? They're not learning. So we condemn all these things. And then the end of the story is interesting. Then the wives of the Brahmins, with the permission of the Brahmins, go to see Krishna directly, but the Brahmins don't go. And why did the Brahmins don't go? Because they still have material fear. Like me. I don't care, Rati, if it's Friday morning, Saturday morning. If I'm staying in your house, I'm going to Mangal Arati at 3:30. I don't care about these drunks. Now you'll see, I'll stay and chant till 5 and go with you. But that's another story. We told that story at the beginning. Very interesting, right? Accosted by a drunk. And one time I was holding his hand for 20 minutes because somehow we shook hands. And I knew if I left his hand, he said, oh, you don't like me now? Oh. why are you dropping my hand? And he said, you've been holding my hand for a long time. I said, you're such a good guy. You call me a good guy? What do you think I'm a good guy? Everything I said. Right? Okay. Any questions by anyone who doesn't know me for 20 years? Okay, Gail, what's your question?
Spins. Okay.
Good, very nice. Good timing, Jai Shri Radhe. Good.
Okay, one of your mantras is the energy between two people who have a relationship is called love.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have
a natural. Sense. Mother and child. Cow and calf. Soul and God. A natural relationship. That's the analogy I was using. The mother and child are, you know, related. They're related beyond any intellect, any arrangement. It's in this life, it's almost they're constitutionally related, a mother and child. So when the child is born, the calf is born, immediately there's this energy without any intellect, judgment, etc., because there's relationship. You ask questions that enable me to explain things more clearly. I'll have to make this point more clear.
Yeah, because, you know, my frame of reference, obviously, is that, you know, there's various relationships that don't necessarily inspire love, you know, even though there's some...
Well, things get screwed up later on, but generally, when a mother gives birth to a child, all things being equal, there's just such a natural energy without intellect, analysis, etc.
Due to what, just the physical connection?
Yeah. Look, when I saw the calf didn't say, oh, this is my mother, she is my maintainer, she is this, and the calf, you know. It was just like incredible energy that indicated some, yeah, if that was material, the bodily, but it was a spontaneous connection of love. Mm-hmm. So it was a good analogy between the soul and God.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and also, you know, I know you tried to address this before, but, you know, when we are sadhakas and trying to develop our love for Krishna, and then it gets to such a height that Krishna says, I want to bestow him with my internal potency, that love.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, the emotion that the sadhaka was experiencing was love.
Right.
And so that love of the sadhaka, I mean, it's an emotion, it's affection.
Yeah.
So what is the real distinction between that and what Krishna gives them?
I got your question. You know, this is a question that's debated by great acharyas, even of our line, different opinions, etc. I've tried to resolve that point, that we have an eternal relationship with Krishna, but also bhava is a descent of the internal potency. So what I would say is we have a desire to serve. But real love, and it's a kind of love, it's a real intense desire to serve. But real love is Krishna's energy that we can offer to him.
But why you don't call it real, the other one? Real love. Why you don't call it?
Okay, we can call it real love, but I'm just saying there's a distinction between that and what is love when you have Krishna's energy that descends on your consciousness. So we can call it real love. Mm-hmm. Or what happens is you get a seed of that when you meet Guru. You get a seed of the bhakti lata bead, so maybe the seed is in your heart. And it's fructifying. But before that, before we have that seed in our heart, our nature is to serve, but it hasn't been manifest. And when we get that seed of devotion and we develop the desire to serve. So what I would say, our constitution, our eternal relationship is to serve Krishna. So that's our nature to serve. But there's a type of love that's an energy of Krishna that's put into our hearts. So you can call them both love. We'll put one with a capital L and one with a small L. I don't know how you want to resolve it etymologically.
I don't know how to
resolve it. I would say that. Small L, big L.
Maybe intensity, maybe.
Anyway, you can look at it from different platforms. So we can say the soul has that same energy. And now it's like water on a tree. So it's growing. Not that it doesn't have any, but to grow fully, it needs some external water. Okay, how's that? Okay, what's your next question?
Yeah, last thing is, the small thing is when you were saying that, you know, we can have an emotion, you know, this affection, I guess, for Krishna, but then, but beyond that, there's also the voice in the heart. Yeah. But to me, you know, the voice is the emotion.
Yeah, the voice is the emotion.
Okay.
Yeah. I try to give analogies to make things clear, which only confuse you, but anyway. Okay, another question here.
I didn't raise my hand earlier because I've also known you for 20 years. As a result. Yeah. So you were saying that a devotee is qualified by this surrender unto the will of the Lord humbly.
Yeah.
And we use the word devotee very loosely to, as I do, to refer to myself. So based on your definition of a devotee, or the definition of a devotee, in full, does that devotee ever reach a point where he knows he's a devotee?
Where he knows?
That he's a devotee. Like, would that devotee ever call himself or herself a devotee?
Well, it's a very interesting thing. From the emotional side, no. Because I describe this in my Monday morning greetings, these points were raised, that prema is a desire. I want Krishna. And the stronger it is, the less you think you have it. Right? Like if you say, I want food. I want food. The more the desire is, it seems that the less really food you have, right? I'm hungry. I'm hungry. I'm hungry. I want food. It means that, you know, maybe that it's digestion. You have less and less and less food, right? So prema is like that. I want Krishna. I want Krishna. I want Krishna. And therefore, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the prayer that Gop Kumar asks from Narada Muni is that, pray for me that I never feel satiated. Because then prema will stop. Enough. I'm satisfied. Enough. I have enough prema. Mm-hmm. So no, it's the nature of love. Mm-hmm. That the more it expands, the less you think you have. Well, look at it this way. Like a clean glass of water, every speck of dust becomes prominent. Dirty water, something adds. Or a clean room is a better example. Someone is really messy. If another, you know, if you're living with them, and there's no like personal thing. If a room is messy, right, and then you walk into that room of a friend and it's really messy, and then you drink a cup and leave something there, they're not going to say anything. But if someone is real fastidious, right? And you, one little thing, they'll notice it. So it's the same thing with the heart. Love purifies the heart. So you're more likely to think you're contaminated than someone who has so many... People are so selfish, and filled with desires. They never think they're selfish. They never think. They think they're great. But if someone is very pure, they become humble. You got it?
So
this is, in case you get old, Gail, I'll still be harassed. No, I'm just joking.
Oh.
No, it's a joke. Go ahead.
So, yeah. They become more humble because why?
Will they become more humble? Why do they become more humble? Because they feel they don't have it. Poverty makes someone humble. If you don't have any money, if you're starving, you can't be proud. A starving person can't be proud. Mm-hmm. So when you're starving for prema, which means you actually have that love, that lack makes you very, very humble. I don't have any devotion. The dhanam, the janam, the sundarim, I don't have. I want this, I want this, I want this. It makes you very humble.
So if we're in a position where we're like proud of our position as a devotee, then we're probably like further.
Yeah, we probably don't have much bhakti. Right. Right, you could see that. Also, we don't see God, and because we don't see God, our relatives' conception of ourselves is very inflated. But real devotee, Parmenjo, he sees God, he experiences God's love. Then he feels I'll make a joke. This is another ethnic joke by me. Okay, when I grew up and went to school, right? You know, with all Jewish kids. I was just an ordinary guy. I didn't think I was very smart. Then all of a sudden I come to ISKCON, everybody thinks I'm brilliant. So it's kind of like that. You know, it's the opposite way around. If I started there and then I went, oh, I'm not that smart. You know, like you go to another level. You know, I'm not that smart. You know? I'm not that smart. When I, you know, it depends. So when you have, you know, you may be like an athlete or something. You may think you're really great, right? And you're in some small country and plays basketball. Then you move to New York City, you know? And all of a sudden you become humble because you see so many people are great at that. So it's when you see God, you become humble. Before that, Prabhupada said, when there's no trees in the forest, the castor oil tree looks big. So when we don't see God, we think we're big. When we see God... Okay? Okay. Sariya Vijayajai. Sariya Vijayajai. Tendiya Taika Jive Pele Visaya Sagare Jive Pele Visaya Sagare Dharma Jai Jivayati Dharma Jai